Blessed be the darkness, the vast expansion, the all-encompassing, all-surrounding womb of space. Blessed be the light, the penetrating point, the all-focusing, all-aligning core of creation. Blessed be the blade that divides the darkness from the light, thus generating duality, and from duality is all substance formed. The cleansing by water, the purity of salt, combining together, so merged we exalt. By the blade that separates the darkness from the light, the babe from the mother, and the world of the living from the realms beyond, I conjure this circle as a sacred place, shifting the confines of time and space, an island apart and a fortress between yesterday's sorrow and tomorrow's dream. Blessed be the vessel wherein the divided may unite. Welcome to the 9th episode of the Covening Podcast. I am your host, Lady Sitara. In the first 7 episodes of the Covening Podcast, I presented many of the fundamentals of Windblown Wicca, including the rite of first-degree initiation. In the 8th episode, I provided my best perspective on the mysteries, first by separating fact from fiction about the history of witchcraft and about magic. Next, I revealed some mysteries about the ancient Mesopotamian goddess and her geometric symbols. But I also revealed some of my dissatisfactions with the initiation rite. This is the 9th episode, and because 9 is a sacred number of the goddess, this is the episode where I will share with you how I came to know the goddess, and some of the components of a possibly more appropriate initiation rite. By the way, I am still working on my Hamantaschen, or Cakes for the Queen of Heaven recipes. I have some recipes up on the covening.org website, and those are probably usable as is, but I'm still making adjustments. I'll let you know when I get the final version uploaded. Before I get into my thoughts about how an initiation into a coven of the old religion should actually be performed, I want to share some of my Ishtar material with you so that you can have it prepared for the next full moon. Here is an invocation to Ishtar. Lady of the morning star, lady of the evening star, lady of the willow and cypress, Ishtar, I call thee, rider of lions, wielder of the mace, wielder of the scimitar, Ishtar, I invoke thee. Come with your basket of figs. Come with your looped reed pillars. Earthbinder, lot reader, wheel turner, I call thee to descend upon thy priestess. O queen of our right, I invoke thee and call upon thee. O mighty queen Ishtar, mother of us all, bringer of all fruitfulness, I call thee to descend upon thy priestess. And here is the charge of the goddess Ishtar. Devoted children, hear my words. Listen through your hearts, and you shall hear from great Ishtar, mother of truth. Before you lie the great oceans and rivers, the vast open cosmos, land and mountains and rocks, trees and vegetation, and creatures who swim, fly, run, and crawl. Behold, my children, before you, and behold those whom I have entrusted to your care. Destroy not the gifts which I have given to you, for all of nature emerges from my womb, and I am a proud creator. I bring forth life by my love. Observe nature, observe your siblings of earth. Seek to learn the laws by which I have created, but remember, I am also queen of chaos. Know that death, destruction, and decay is a necessary part of life. Through your striving, you shall discover things you cannot understand. Snub them not, for there will always be more that you cannot know on earth. Nor shall you pretend that your knowledge be absolute. For just as you are sure of my laws, you shall find exception. You shall find reason to recant. You who seek to know and love me shall find me best within yourself. Strive to grow within, and you shall reach me. Learn to love my manifestations in all their variety upon the earth. You shall learn your lessons best through love. Love is the binder that connects us and the key to unlock the mysteries. That was the charge of the goddess Ishtar. When I was about 4 or 5 years old, very early in my childhood, I was outside in the morning, playing by myself at the beach, looking through the pebbles, when I heard a sound similar to an angelic choir, or harmonics similar to the drone of a propeller aeroplane in the distance. Of course, I looked up to see where the sound was coming from, and the sky shone in rapidly changing colors of pink and blue, and then more colors, with a warmth and intensity that I had never seen before. An unusual feeling came over me. I felt like I was in the presence of a great being, and I, and every part of me that ever was and ever would be, was completely known to this being, and deeply and eternally loved. At the same time, I felt as if a vast cosmos surrounded me, and it was teeming with life. Every part of it was alive, and that feeling lasted a few seconds, but while it was happening, it felt as if it was the only permanent reality. I was in awe. Remember I talked about our brains, our senses, and our bodies being filters of a greater reality? There are wavelengths and colors that our eyes do not normally see. There are vibrations that our ears don't normally hear. The universe, even just the earth, even our own little patch of earth, has so much potential sensory data that if we did not have eyes and ears and brains filtering out the bulk of it, that we would not be able to function as human beings. We would just be overwhelmed by all the sensory input. When that experience in my childhood passed, I saw some people walking on the footpath to the boardwalk that was about 50 feet away from me, and I ran up to them and asked them if they had heard the sound in the sky or seen the lights. Of course, they had no idea what I was talking about, and I didn't have the language to describe it to them. Deep in my heart, I could feel a plea rising within me. Please, don't make me be alone. I think I went home and tried to explain it to my mother, who also had no idea what I was talking about. Sometime soon thereafter, my dad decided to teach me about God. He came to me when I was in bed, before sleep, as my mom or dad sometimes did when they were going to tell me stories. Dad told me that there was a being who was everywhere and knew everything, and who was the creator of the universe, and who had no physical form. Finally, my experience might be put into context, but I didn't understand why my dad kept referring to this being as he, because what I felt definitely had a feminine, mother quality to it, at least by my filters. So I asked my dad, "Why do you keep calling God he?" And when Dad provided an explanation, I asked, "Are you sure?" Then my dad reconsidered. He said this being has no form, so it isn't really male or female, but we are Jewish, and as Jews we worship God the Father. I told my dad I would try. I'm sure that at least shut me up about my experience, and I tucked it away in the back of my mind. From there it took me over 14 years of twists and turns to figure out that I was a pagan witch, and when I tell the whole story, people fall asleep. So you'll hear pieces of it in other episodes and only a summary here. The goddess never told me to worship her. The only message I received was, "I am ubiquitous, I see you, and I love you. There is a greater reality than the one you can perceive with your senses. The goddess never told me she would be angry if I worshipped other gods, nor that she was the one and only god, but it did feel to me as if she was everything. My drive to learn about her came out of yearnings to reconnect and to learn how to reconnect. Who would not want to reconnect with overwhelming love? My search for others who had similar experiences or orientation arose out of the need for companionship and sharing knowledge. I struggled with everything else in my life. My childhood family life, where my family attempted to mold a pentacle peg into a hexagonal hole. My schooling, where my ambitions were unladylike and unsubmissive. My career, where I was labeled aggressive and disliked by the bosses who were intimidated by my expertise. My love life, where I struggled until I learned the rules about boundaries and forgiveness and love. But somehow, whenever I attended pagan circles or festivals or study groups, doors opened for me, for which I am eternally grateful. Similarly, in spite of my dyslexia, when it came to reading about the occult or Hittites or the goddess, I managed to absorb or find the most relevant message among the endless sea of dancing letters. It was a long time ago, long before the internet, when I was lonely and searching for my spiritual comrades, and there were pluses and minuses to that. The minuses were that the books, meaning reliable information, and contacts were very difficult to find. So even when something wasn't an exact fit, I didn't go hunting for better. I was grateful for what I had found. The pluses were that once I started going to festivals, some of which were small and intimate, maybe 100 participants or so, and some larger, maybe 500 people, the fact that I already had so much training and exposure in comparison to the other participants who had not been searching for the goddess religion since childhood, put me in a unique position of being able to be sometimes a participant, sometimes a presenter, and converse in depth with other presenters who seemed as curious to meet me as I was to meet them. I had the opportunity to meet and learn from many of the pagan leaders, authors, and organizers who preceded me. If you get the opportunities, I highly recommend making the effort to meet your heroes. 19 times out of 20, I was not disappointed. I've been told that I do a lot of name-dropping, and this is probably why. Unfortunately, many of those teachers that I respected, admired, loved, and some of whom I circled with, have shed their mortal shells. Some of them at a younger age than I am now. So I am doing my best to reconnect with the ones who are still alive and also provide you, especially the next generation, with what I can give you before I pass. Windblown has followed a Gardnerian-type outline, procedures, and protocols for our first-degree initiation, because most of our parent covens did, and because we wanted to belong to the club of traditional Wicca. But with the decline of Gardnerian covens and covens off that lineage that remain true to the original form, and the upsurge in solitaries and homespun groups, I'm not sure how relevant that is anymore. If you listened to the last episode, you know that I'm not thrilled with the Gardnerian initiation model. And because I am me, I am thinking about writing an alternative that windblown covens can use if they prefer. So, as I usually do when I begin a writing project, I ask myself, what is the final goal? What is the end product after an initiation? We know that an initiation acknowledges a change that has already taken place. What is that change? The initiate has been circling with us for at least a year and a day and has completed the preliminary assignments for joining the coven. Be patient with me because I am going to be approaching this process backwards in order to compile all the elements necessary for initiation. But by the end, when we reach the beginning, we should have a full picture. Judy Harrow is no longer with us, but I had the privilege of meeting, circling, and interacting with her when she was alive. Her book, Wicca Covens, How to Start and Organize Your Own, is the best book I've ever encountered yet on the subject. I would go so far as to say that it is the definitive book on creating your own coven from scratch, and I have written 4 yet unpublished books. The information she presents is very high level, exposing all the pitfalls as well as all the great potential and workings that covens can do. Buried on page 83 in a chapter entitled Parents, Children, and the Coven, Judy reveals the mystery about what covens are. I will quote her. Witchcraft is not a religion, but a committed religious order. Our religion is paganism. Our initiation brings a person into the dedicated clergy of our religion. Close quote. But there is more to this. Yes, it is true that every initiate in the old religion is a priest or priestess. But where is our congregation? We have neither a congregation nor a pope. Instead, we have peers who share the same spiritual journey and have become our second family, at least for a while and sometimes for life. So those are the 2 changes that we now want to acknowledge with initiation. That the initiate is now a priest or priestess of the old religion, and that the initiate is now a full member of the coven. And what are the things we would share or give to a new initiate? How about the contact information for all their coven mates? If that is the case, then the members of the coven, who are already initiates, need to be amenable to the new initiate having their contact information. Do we trust the dedicate? Isn't that one of the tests? Perfect love and perfect trust? If there is a coven symbol, like a coven pendant or a coven ring, then that will be one of the gifts. Some covens either prefer or allow tattoos of the coven symbol. Both tattoos and piercings are good symbolically because they denote a permanent lifelong change. Also, at or after the initiation, the initiate should be presented with the coven map of the astral. What happens in our collective imaginations when we act within circle? Then there is the challenge and the oath. Yes, I do think those need to be included, but let's tackle them one at a time. The purpose of the challenge, we are looking at the end goal in order to determine the path there, is to make sure that the dedicate understands what they are getting into. For the dedicate to make a formal declaration of their intentions, an acknowledgement of the potential dangers, and an agreement to abide by coven rules. On page 63 of Judy Harrow's Wicca Covens, How to Start and Organize Your Own, under the subheading of Pre-Initiatory Dedication Ritual, as used in the Proteus Coven, is a list of questions that the elder asks of the dedicate. I like most of the questions. Some of them I would modify or omit as redundant, but who is witness to those questions and answers? And is the questioning done inside or outside of a circle, during the initiation or prior to it? In my mind, those questions are an interview for a position within the coven. I would do it inside the circle, where it would be witnessed by all coveners at a time just prior to the initiation, perhaps at the full moon prior to initiation. And with the dedicate's permission, I would record the audio answers to those questions so that those answers could be written into the oath that the dedicate will sign during initiation. Otherwise, I would have a scribe record the dedicate's answers with pen and paper. Then the coven has a time between that full moon and the dark moon to raise any objections to the initiation of the dedicate, and it would be very sad indeed if any issue should appear at this late a date after the dedicate has spent a year in preparation, but better now than after the initiation. One advantage to this method is that the oath is composed of the dedicate's own words in response to the questions. I am going to provide some sample questions here, which are not exactly the ones that Judy Harrow provided, but they cover the same essentials. Elder, state your magical name and your purpose within this circle. Dedicate, my magical name is your magical name here, and I am asking to be initiated into witchcraft, the old religion, and to join your coven named here. Elder, what is your understanding of the old religion? How would you describe it? Elder, do you understand that witchcraft is the priesthood of the old gods and the old ways of nature, and that every initiate witch is a member of that priesthood? Elder, do you understand that by submitting yourself to initiation, you will transform your life forever and future lives in ways that no one can predict, and that you are potentially exposing yourself to danger? Elder, do you understand that you are a free agent who can choose to be a member of this coven or not, but while you are a member, you must abide by the rules of our coven and follow the direction of the elders? Elder, do you understand that your commitment to the gods as a priest or priestess does not depend on your membership in this coven, that there are other covens and solitary paths, and that any part of your oath that is sworn to the gods remains in effect when you leave this coven? Elder, do you understand that your commitment to the gods involves serving the gods by serving their people? Elder, in order to join the coven, you must agree to keep secret the personal information of your fellow coveners that they want you to keep secret. In other words, you should not reveal anything about any fellow covener without their permission. Are you able and willing to do so? And describe why or how you understand this necessity. Elder, will you practice and teach the knowledge and wisdom of the craft and its mysteries for the love of the gods and their people alone, and not for personal gain? Elder, will you agree to refrain from amassing your own coven until you have completed the course of study that prepares you for that? Elder, what have you done to prepare yourself for initiation? You get the idea. I need to share an inconvenient truth. Ultimately, you cannot control what other people do with the information you share. That also goes for this podcast. I cannot control what you will do with the information I share. I can take action after the fact, and although an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, overprotection can be more stifling than a rogue actor here or there claiming authority they do not have or credit they have not earned, and extracting benefits for which they are not entitled. The old religion does a pretty good job of self-policing. That is, when we discover someone abusing or misusing their position or information, the word gets out in a hurry. But we are all reluctant to make that first call until we have heard both sides of the issue, as we should be. My choices were to share or to let it all be buried with me. You know what choice I made. But back to initiation. What about the other trappings of initiation? The fasting and meditation in preparation, purification bath, the taking of the measures, the scourging? Yes, some covens perform initiatory scourging. Actually, these acts serve some purposes. The idea here is to do something that is impactful or unusual to the dedicate's body. First, so that the initiation will be permanently memorable, and second, to try to shock the dedicate into a transcendent experience. Unfortunately, while we do want to provide a transcendent experience, We don't want to actually traumatize our initiates. And different people react differently to sensory stimulus. From foot washing to hallucinogenics to yogic breathing techniques, there are many possibilities, and nothing is going to be perfect or even good for everyone. This is what the original baptismal dunk was about. When was the last time you took a roller coaster ride? I think I would combine some legal hallucinogens, including mugwort, after all we are witches, with some electrical or auditory brain stimulation. But these are half-formed ideas, and I haven't put the whole thing together yet. I would probably keep the taking the measure because we have a mystery associated with that. But if you don't, there's no reason to keep it. It is at times like this when I wish I had a coven mates who could brainstorm with me, perhaps at the next festival that I attend. Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Covening Podcast. You can find me at covening.org and Covening or Covening Podcast on Blue Sky. Future episodes will include Hittites, stories about festivals, and definitely the Mesopotamian spring equinox rite. For now, blessed be. By the blade that cleaves the darkness and light, the babe from the mother, and the world of the living from the realms beyond, I carve a tunnel to the mortal realm. As common persons, we are masked until the circle be recast. Sacred ground remain unseen. Silence rules the worlds between. Till next we answer magic's call and meet together, witches all.